Welcome to the Cutter's Notch podcast, hosted by author Michael DeCamp and his family. Recorded in the Cutter's Notch studios, this podcast explores anything related to creativity. You'll find interviews with creative people, such as authors, artists, and performers, as well as friendly banter about any number of topics. Turn up the volume, listen, and catch up on what's happening in Cutter's Notch.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast. I am your host, Michael DeCamp. I'm here with my co-host and my wife, Nancy. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Mike. Hi, everybody. Glad you're here with us today.
So we are here today. We've got some exciting news coming up. But before we get into that, I want to definitely take a moment to recognize our sponsor, the official cider of the Cutter's Notch podcast.
Yes, that would be Ash and Elm Cider Company, right, Mike?
That's right. Located right here in beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana, on the east side on East Washington Street. And I'm actually enjoying one of their
ciders. What do you have today?
What's your flavor? I've got margarita cider.
Ah, margarita. That's a nice summer flavor. That's one of the seasonal ones, isn't it?
It is. And I'm very fond of it. I seem to be fond of, I liked their old fashioned, which is kind of a bourbon flavor. And I like this margarita flavor. I don't know what that's saying about me, but hey, it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Well, good. Well, and for those of you who are not in Indianapolis, never fear, go to their website and you can order in most locations. I think there's about 38 states or municipalities where you can obtain Ash and Elm at Ash and Elm Cider. .com.
That's right. AshandElmCider.com.
So thank you, Ash and Elm. And if you haven't, check them out.
Absolutely. Now, time for our creative indulgences. Nancy, what's your creative indulgence this time around?
Okay. So I'd heard mixed reviews on the movie. Netflix did a version of Jane Austen's Persuasion. And I was
not
like,
my genre.
No, not your genre. But I was like, well, I'll check it out. I don't watch a lot of TV. I don't watch a lot of movies, but because I guess, you know, maybe the controversy or the conversation about it was like, well, let me check it out. Because it is done differently, but I will say I enjoyed it. Now, if you're a Jane Austen purist and the Regency romance era kind of stories, you want to stick straight to and make sure everything's in line, you might not like it. But if you go just for pure entertainment, I think you might entertain. So I was entertained by it. I enjoyed it.
Well, very, very good.
How about you, Mike? What have you pursued recently in terms of creativity or something to expand your mind or?
Well, expand my mind. My brain needs expansion. I would say mine is on Netflix also. Just last evening from this recording, I watched their new action flick, The Gray Man.
Oh, that's with Ryan Reynolds, right?
No. Wrong Ryan.
Wrong Ryan. What Ryan's in it?
Ryan Gosling.
Oh, Ryan Gosling. Okay.
Yeah. So, I got to tell you, I like Ryan Gosling as a hero.
Really?
Yeah, he's good. I don't know if you remember a few years ago, we saw him in one, I think, I'm trying to remember what the movie was. Was it called The Driver or something? Anyway, that was really, really good. I remember really liking that movie. And watching this movie, he really plays a great action hero.
Well, good. So, I'll have to check it out whenever I get around to it there.
High energy, high action, just enough backstory so that you gain some fondness. And
yeah, I was going to say, is it one of those where it's just blowing things up and escaping?
There's plenty of blowing things up and escaping, right, and fighting. Right.
But no storyline kind of thing?
Well, there's a little bit, just enough story arc to keep you looking.
Sure.
And just enough backstory to get you to appreciate the main character.
Yeah.
But the main focus clearly is on the action.
It's on the action.
And so it's really done, and from my perspective, very well. It's one of the best action flicks I've seen in a long time.
Well, good. I'll have to check it out.
It wasn't exactly mindless blowing things up, but it wasn't overthought and overwrought.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I would say the Gray Man, really, really good, really good flick.
Well, and we saw recently, I'll just throw this in there because I don't think we talked about it.
I don't think we did.
Do we talk about Top Gun?
No, we didn't.
And that was done well. We watched the first Top Gun movie at home like the night before. And then we went to the theater and saw that. And I thought it was done well.
Oh yeah.
I was surprised by how well I thought it was done. I mean, I thought, oh, this will be a good show and such, but.
Well, people really loved the, you know, the real footage of the F-18s and
yeah, you know, that was all the dog fighting in the planes and such.
Oh yeah. That's pretty incredible. But I thought it was very interesting how the storyline really paralleled the very first story.
Yeah.
So
the interesting thing though, I was talking to a friend just today who she just went and saw it just a couple of days ago. And she said, the thing of it is, I thought that Tom Cruise's character was more likable because with age, he learned some things. You know, he still had his, you know,
cockiness.
I wouldn't say his cockiness. He still had his willingness to go out there and to push the limits. Mm-hmm. I think he lost some of his cockiness.
Right.
So he got to a point where, you know, life had seasoned him and stuff. So he was more likable. So I thought that was interesting that was her observation, but. Yeah, if you haven't seen that one, you want some. Yeah. So you can find a modern take to a Regency romance or a superhero or, you know.
Well, Ryan Gosling is not a superhero.
Right.
Yeah, this is I guess I didn't really explain that. He's a CIA guy.
Right.
Right. So
but you had alluded to him that he was a hero in this movie. So if I use superhero, I didn't mean like Superman.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe you just misunderstood my communication. So he's a CIA operative.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway, maybe we.
Hope we didn't spoil that for anybody there. But well, aside from creative indulgences, you have some news for us about a creative indulgence of your own, Mike, don't you?
Well, yeah, I've got some big news. I have been working for the last couple of years on the third book in my trilogy. So if you've ever wondered where the term cutter's notch comes from,
everybody who comes to the podcast says, what's cutter's notch?
Where's cutter's notch come from? Which immediately tells me they haven't read any of my books yet, but that's okay.
Yep.
Because
they're asking.
There's still people out there that need to discover what Cutter's Notch is all about. But Cutter's Notch is a little town that I have created in my imagination in southwestern Indiana. And so that's the Cutter's Notch connection.
Which we were joking. We were just hiking recently in Brown County and we were like, yeah, we're just a hill and a holler away from Cutter's Notch.
That's right.
Fictitious Cutter's Notch.
In fact, I was thinking about that while you were trying to kill me on the trails just recently.
That's the fictional location of your stories.
Yes, fictitious town of Cutter's Notch is the location. And I've just finished the third novel in the Cutter's Notch trilogy. The trilogy is complete. And by the time you hear this podcast, that third book will be available for purchase on Amazon.
That is awesome. Well done there, Mike. Well done. How's that feel?
Well, it's kind of interesting, Nancy, because I have been working on this trilogy, actually continually writing on this trilogy since about 2009 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
So you've had the book one, Abandoned Hope,
right?
Which I started around 2009 or 10. And then you have Nozomi's Battle.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Reckless Abandon, which is the third one. That's coming out. It will be out by the time this podcast is out. In the mix, though, you have Cutter's Notch Interludes, which is a series of short stories. Two or three of those I actually wrote several years before Abandoned Hope. And so they were part of the story, but they didn't know they were part of the story when I originally wrote them.
Gotcha.
Which is very interesting to me.
How they came in there, yeah.
But the actual seed of the idea for this trilogy started way back in the late 90s. Right. I think I've told listeners before.
It was before then.
Well, it was early. It was late 90s. No, not 90s, 80s. It was the late 80s.
Yep.
And I've probably told this story on here before, but I'll tell you again. Because we have time and it's our podcast and we can do that. So, but Nancy wears a retainer because she had orthodontics work when she was a kid. She wore braces. And in the late 80s, her retainer disappeared.
It just went missing. It was nowhere to be found.
We searched the house over. Now this is, if Angela was around, she was just a baby.
She was not around. She was not even born yet. That's why I said it was in the
late 80s. Yeah, so it was 88 or early 89. And so Nancy kept her retainer in a little plastic hockey puck looking box, and that thing was gone. We looked in every drawer.
And usually our rule is if one of us loses something, we just quit looking and tell the other one, because the other one usually walks into the room and finds it immediately.
Exactly.
That didn't happen that time.
In this case, we took turns and we both looked, and we looked under furniture, under the bed, in the bed, behind the toilet, in the freezer.
It was months. We looked everywhere. Months.
Yes. And then one day I walked in the bedroom, looked at our dresser, and it's sitting right on the corner of our dresser.
It was so freaky. It was freaky. It was like, what the heck? We know this has not been here. No.
I said, Nancy, you found your retainer. And she said, no, I didn't.
Yeah, I was like, no.
I said, well, it's right here. And she's like, no way. So she comes running in, and we're both looking at it, like scratching our head. And I just came out with this little thing I said, mm-hmm. and I'm not even sure where it came from, but I think I said something to the effect of, well, I guess the dimensional bandits were finished with it.
Yeah. Now, we have speculation. We will not tell you. If you want to know how we speculated the story, really, how it really happened, you can talk to us offline, because we want to protect the innocent or what have you.
We want to keep the mystery out there if you want to.
That's where the thought of the dimensional bandits or people of another
dimension. That's where it started. And I played with the idea for about 20 years until I got the original story scope of Abandoned Hope in my head. Mm-hmm. So then I started working on that. And now here we are in 2022. Third book is finished. Now you think about that. Let's say 89 to 99, that's 10. To 2009, that's 20. To 2019, that's 30. 33 years I've been working on this story.
It better be good.
It better be. I think it's good. My editor said it was the best novel she has read in a long time.
That's so encouraging. That has to be encouraging, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, because she reads all the time.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, she just thought it was... awesome.
In all transparency, I have not read the third book yet. I received a rough draft, but on the second book, you gave me a rough draft and I read it. And then you were like, oh, but I changed it. I know it wasn't major changes, but you need to read it. Cause I tweaked it and changed stuff. And I'm like, oh, I read it, you know? So this time I started to, at one point I thought, I'm just going to wait. So I will be getting my copy here in the near future and reading the third one.
Yeah.
So I can see if she's telling you the truth or not. I'm going to test her. But that is so exciting.
She's telling me the truth from her perspective.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's got a different take. Well,
and I will say, to be fair, most people I have observed when they do become writers and they become published, that their works do change and improve. Like I read a series of books by an author. Loved them. And then I went back and read an earlier series that she had written that was like one of the first things she'd ever written. I still loved it, but I could very definitely tell a difference in her writing. Mm-hmm. And so I would imagine that to be the case for you.
I have no doubt that my writing has improved since Abandoned Hope. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I felt like I have a really good story in Abandoned Hope, but my skills on how to sculpt the story mm-hmm. have improved. Mm-hmm. So if you started reading Abandoned Hope and you thought, boy, this guy is really kind of a, not that awesome. Well, first of all, you're wrong, but once we get past agreed. As I go along, I get better. And I think this third book is a great story.
Do you like one of the trilogy books better than the others?
Oh, no.
So it's kind of like your children. You love them all equally, kind of. They're all unique.
In my imagination, it's all one big story.
Now that's right? Fair. Yeah.
So it's broken into three books plus the short stories, but it's all one big story in my mind. Mm-hmm. So that whole thing is my baby.
Is it really the end? Because I know a few podcasts ago, we were talking to another author, and it was like your characters go off and do their own thing. So
Well, I would say that it's the end of this storyline. But I think there's more to happen in Cutter's Notch.
Okay.
It just won't be this storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be some of the characters that will show up in other future places. Stories.
So the third book is based in Cutter's Notch as well. All of the trilogy.
The entire trilogy is based in Cutter's Notch. There are little forays, like there's a couple of forays into Muncie, my hometown, the real city of Muncie.
So there's scariness to it, right?
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Well, that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
I think there's a trip to a hospital in Bloomington, but other than that, it's everything happens in
pretty much the main story.
Cutter's Notch, Indiana. So, and
what would be fun is if rural Indiana, there's small places that small little communities could pull together and become a little town. Wouldn't it be fun if you really got a Cutter's Notch, Indiana?
Yeah. Maybe some little town just decided to change its name.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be great.
Or to incorporate and become that.
Maybe we'll buy a house there and move.
Oh,
that'd be creepy. but one of the cool things about writing this story is there is an underlying story arc that I did not plan.
Oh, so this is where it kind of takes off on its own kind of thing. Like our author friend Chaz were talking about.
Yeah. It kind of took on a kind of a life of its own. And there's a story arc in there that I didn't really think about, particularly when I started, but it just kind of evolved as the characters evolved.
Mm-hmm.
In the first story, Abandoned Hope, every character, of course, the main character is a girl named Hope Spencer.
Right.
And that's the play on words. So Abandoned Hope has to do with Hope Spencer, who disappears in the first book.
Don't tell him.
Well, that's
don't
the,
tell him your
one,
plan.
That's one of the first things that happens. So she disappears in the first book, and it's all about trying to find Hope. But when you read the story, what you find, and I didn't do this on purpose, is almost all the characters in their own life in one way, shape, or form are seeking hope in their life. And I didn't really write it that way intentionally, but it's there. And then you move on into book two, and it becomes about overcoming darkness with the power of love. So in the first book, they're looking for hope,
mm-hmm.
and then they're overcoming darkness with the power of love.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last book, it's about redemption.
Hmm.
And I didn't really put that there on purpose. So, it's not overtly religious, but there is a certain amount of undertone that's in there.
That's spiritual.
It's like a spiritual undertone that I didn't plan.
An internal seeking and growth and journey.
I didn't plan it that way. And that's kind of the wacky thing for me. Almost a little surreal.
How does it feel to be done with it?
Well, honestly, maybe a little lost. It's like, okay, what do we do?
What are you going to do next? Yeah.
Before I get into that.
Yeah.
But you feel
a little lost. Do you feel accomplished?
Yes. Yes, I feel very accomplished. I mean, I'm an accomplished person, not like that. I just mean like I feel like I've actually got something significant that I've carried all the way to completion. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very encouraging to me.
Well, and one of the things I want to put out there that I appreciate so much, and I know we've talked about this on other podcasts when it comes to writing, when we've talked to other writers, or when, as you and I have talked about the writing process, you could think, gosh, that's a really long time to write. And that book's not that thick,
mm-hmm.
but you have a day job.
I do.
So I would see you take time every morning, get up, have your coffee, breakfast, watch the highlight of the news, and then go upstairs early and write for 45 minutes to an hour every single day, day in, day out. And, you can only get so far in that time frame. Occasionally you've taken time off of work just to devote to writing and or the time when business is shut down, like between Christmas and New Year's, that you would work, set time aside to really do a lot of work on it. But it's taken that time because you've done that while balancing your other life responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I was very this time, every time, every book, I've kind of done my writing time differently. Like in the first book, that took four or five years to write Abandoned Hope. And I wrote it in spurts. I would get discouraged. I would put it aside. Then I'd come back and I'd write some more. I did a lot of writing from my lazy boy chair in the evenings, sometimes late at night, which might explain some of the issues with it. But despite that, I worked hard on that book. And I worked hard on it for a long time. The second book came easier. Mm-hmm. And I changed my pattern. I still wrote mostly in the evenings, but I was traveling a lot for work. And so I would take it with me.
Right, right. That's right. While you're in a hotel room, what else can you do? You're right.
Yeah, so I'd work on it in a hotel room. This time around, I wrote this one through the pandemic. So
you were here.
I was here. I wasn't traveling. I was in my office every day. And I just set aside time every morning. Mm-hmm. It really wasn't quite a 45 minutes an hour. Sometimes it might be up close to 40. But
okay, let's not get specific here. The point is, I'm impressed by how dedicated you were every morning to just go in there and labor away at it consistently to do it. That was very impressed by that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. But I managed to knock it out and get it done pretty quickly. I think it's come the fastest of any of the three. So this one's been pretty good, and I really love the story. And maybe I should kind of explain some of the story.
Careful.
It's hard because
maybe what people need to do is you really want to hear a response from people who are reading it. Because by this time, people have read it and are reading it, you think?
I would think so. I would think so.
So
well, let's just say there are creatures, there's elves, there's fallen elves, it's in the real world Indiana, but it's also in this alternate dimension, and it's there's everything from Sasquatch, fairies, monsters, spiders.
It goes in alignment, but I think expands from what you're saying. It goes in alignment with the other two stories, but kind of expands it and takes it a little bit more.
Well, each story has gone deeper into the fantasy side.
Sure.
But also Cutter's Notch has gotten larger as a community too.
Sure, so, sure. That's exciting.
One of the cool creations for me in this story is there's a diner in this one. And
Like the Pixie Diner?
Yeah, a little bit kind of like the Pixie Diner. Or if you're in central Indiana, Pixie Diner, for those of you who don't know, used to be a diner on the south side of Muncie.
It looked like the diner, diner from the movie The Blob, right?
Yes, and Nancy's been mad at me for about 30 years because I never took her there before.
We said, we're going to go, and then it was closed.
At any rate, I did take you to the Metro Diner in Plainfield, Indiana.
A book signing thing there. Yeah, I went out there to the book signing, but you haven't actually taken me there to eat.
Oh, well, we can do that.
Okay, guys, so you have it on record.
They will forget.
But you have a diner in this. That's exciting.
Yes. Yes. So and it's very much like that Metro Diner or Pixie Diner, kind of like a 50s style that's been remodeled. There's some action that takes place in the diner. So that was kind of fun to write and imagine.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Now, before I know we got something else we're going to do here in just a minute, but before we do that, I want to give a recommendation. If you're out there and you're thinking, well, maybe I will pick up Mike's books and read them, let me give you a recommendation on the order in which to read them. So obviously books 1, 2, and 3 are in order. So Abandoned Hope,
Nozomi's
Battle, Reckless Abandon. Mm-hmm. But in the mix there is this Cutter's Notch Interludes.
Yeah, the short stories. I really enjoyed the short stories.
Now the short stories, they're not completely necessary to enjoy the novels.
Right.
But they are kind of important because they provide background information on certain characters and certain places.
Yeah. So when would you suggest them reading the interludes
I would suggest that you read the interludes between Abandoned Hope and Nozomi's Battle.
I think that's when I did.
Yeah. Now, as an alternate, you could read Abandoned Hope and then read Linda's Window and Davy's Gift out of the interludes, then read Nozomi's Battle, and then read Out of the Depths of Abandon, Penny's Pet Peeve, and Rose in the Wooden Box before you read Reckless Abandon.
go ahead and just read all of them at once.
Yeah.
You could split them up.
But read,
you could split them up,
Definitely read the short stories
after Abandoned
Hope. After Abandoned Hope, but before you get to the other two.
Yeah.
Just to give you the background information and things like that.
Yeah.
So I think as a recommendation.
That's good to know. I always like to know when an author says what order of books, how you should read them and such. Because sometimes they do say, oh, no, read the second one first and then go back to the first one or whatever. So
that's good advice. I've talked to my publisher. We might put all four books at some point in time. We may put all four books in a set.
Yeah.
But that would be an ebook only.
Okay.
Not in paper. So if you want them in paper, you got to buy. You just have to buy all four books.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, that's the cool thing. That's my big news. That's I'm so excited.
I'm so proud of you. And it's so fun to see this all come through.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm like, well, what's next, Mike? What are you going to do next?
That's the 50,000 word question.
Because that's what I've done in between the books. So you get one done. I'm like, okay, get the next one done.
Yeah,
okay,
she's been really good. She's like, done. You know, writer's got to write, creator's got to create.
Not to nag.
I've got options, right? So I've had a couple people suggest that I need to write another devotional book, like my Loving Out Loud book.
Yeah.
But I really felt that book was really came out of a compulsion, and I'm not really feeling that compulsion.
And with a devotional book, you really want to have some direction.
Yeah, I want to feel that depth of pull.
Mm-hmm.
A while ago, before I started, I think even before I started Nozomi's Battle, I started this family drama book that was based on my mother's life. I could go back to that. Mm-hmm. That's still cranking around back in my head. But my publisher's been like, what are you going to do next? Fantasy thrillers are really hot right now.
I think they are. As I talk to people, what are you reading? What are you reading? You know, because I'm a reader, so I'll ask people. Yeah. And that does come up.
And just so you know, my Cutter's Notch series is a fantasy thriller series. Mm-hmm. Young adult fantasy thriller series.
Yeah.
So I'm really leaning towards that. I actually have a character idea.
Oh.
If I do it the way that I'm thinking of doing it, this book will be written in the series. It'll be another series. And it'll be written in first person. So you'll be seeing everything from the perspective of the main character.
You know, I like when you switch things up like that, whether it's first person or I've read some books where each chapter is from the perspective of a character.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time you get through towards the middle or end of the book, without even looking just by the writing style and the communication style, you know which character's perspective it is. And so that's kind of interesting there, and Mike.
Here's the thing, the main character, who is not fully named yet, he's going to be around late teens, early 20s. He is a wanderer. And the very first episode will open with him walking into Cutter's Notch at midnight on June the 21st, which is the longest
summer solstice. Dun, dun, dun.
And here's the thing about this character you got to know is he can see things and feel things that other people can't see and feel. And that's not really all that unusual. It's a common genre.
Yeah, you see that
trope,
out there.
But he also has almost no short-term memory. So his memory only goes back about 2 days. He doesn't really know who he is or where he comes from. The only thing he knows is he has a notebook that he writes in. And that's the only way that he can maintain any knowledge of where he's been and what he's done.
Hmm.
And he only knows his name because on the first page, his name is written.
My name is.
Your name is. And he knows that he's got an end destination in his mind. He knows he has to get to X place. Right now, I'm leaning towards Sarasota, Florida. And so his adventures are going to be on his way getting to Sarasota, Florida, say. Huh. And then so each story will take place in a new location. So he'll start in Cutter's Notch, but he's going to go on to other locations along the way.
Well, I think you've got some room to do some stuff there.
That's what I'm toying around with. And folks out there, as you listen to that, if that sounds like an interesting story idea, or story concept for you, let me know. So that's I don't really know for sure what's next, but that's kind of...
That's kind of weird. Sometimes you want to just let it simmer a little bit.
That's what I'm doing.
And then it starts going. That's why.
Actually, I didn't use this in my creative indulgence, but another show I've been watching on Netflix right now, which is one of those kind of those crazy... it's not Ancient Aliens kind of show. It's the show on Netflix called The Unexplained.
Yeah, you were telling me about that.
With William Shatner. And it goes into all these kind of unexplained things. And I'm not watching it because I'm buying into all these things. I'm watching it because it's stoking my imagination.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm just letting things simmer and I'm playing with it. And I'll come up with an idea concept and I'll start writing it
eventually. Excellent. So tell everybody again the name of the third book and where they can get it.
Reckless Abandon. And it's Reckless Abandon, Cutter's Notch, Book 3. You can buy it on Amazon. You can also order it from any of your favorite bookstores.
Yeah, if you go to them and say, I want Reckless Abandon by Michael DeCamp.
They can bring it in for you. Absolutely. You can go to my website. By the time, very soon,
You could reach out, to Mike through his website or whatever and get more information, right?
I may have a link on my website that will take you to the Amazon page.
Okay.
I don't have it there yet because it's not live yet, but I will soon. Like
everybody goes to Amazon though. So
yeah,
if they have their own Amazon account, they could go straight there.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
So that's the
scoop. Well done.
Thanks.
So transitioning from that.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I love about doing the podcast with you, because I'm not a podcast kind of person. I only have so many words in a day.
Yeah, that's why we have to record on the weekend. You haven't used them all up.
But I love talking to people who inspire creativity or have a creative approach. Maybe their job, as we've talked to authors and musicians and artists, is creative in nature, or they're entrepreneurs and they approach life or business from a creative way. You know, it's the idea of the wow, I never thought of that. Or, well, that's a really cool idea. Or I didn't realize all the approach that it took into it. So I went in and I looked up a bunch of creative ideas and I'm going to present them to you, Mike. And I may have had one or two of them that I've thrown out to you in the past. And you're going to tell the audience whether you think it's a thumbs up or a thumbs down, something that you would really go for. Or you're like, yeah, I'm not so sure. Are you up for the thumbs up, thumbs down?
Let's give it a go.
Is it really something? Okay, this one I've mentioned before to you, but it is a flat screen in the bathroom stalls of a movie theater so that when you go to the restroom at the movie theater, you don't miss anything. And the image I saw, it was an actual, stall where you had the toilet and the screen was on the floor.
No, thumbs down. I can tell you for a fact in the men's room, that would not be a good place for a screen. No.
Well, if they had it somewhere, what do you think the ideal in general, though, to have your movie still playing? Because they make the drinks at the movie theaters are so big.
Well, I think it's a concept that's possible. I would rather see them actually build each individual theater compartment, where the screen is.
Yeah.
Put the men's and ladies restrooms, put a men's and ladies restroom actually in the back of that space. Because you've got these new theaters now have these stadium seating.
Right.
So you there's could lots have. Of space underneath. Yeah. So let's put the restrooms for each individual stadium room underneath the stadium. And then that way you don't have to go as far to get to the restroom.
Yeah.
Number one. And then if you want to put some screens up that are showing the movie that's playing in the same theater, then you could put them above the urinals in the men's room. You can put them on the stall doors in the ladies' room.
Or wasn't there a restaurant in Indianapolis that used to have, you could have it so it looks like a mirror in the
restaurant. Yeah,
But in the theater, it would look like a mirror, but it's really just a one way. And when someone's in the restroom, they can look through and they can still see what's going on the screen.
Yeah, it's a two way mirror or whatever.
And you at least have the sound going, so they're hearing it while.
Yeah, it's a mirror on one side and a window on the other side. So
potential with something like that, maybe.
Potential,
but
potential,
not,
but don't put the no. Do not put not, the screen in the on the floor. You know what men do.
Yes, yes, I know, yeah. I know.
We don't need to go into that.
Had three older brothers, have a husband, I know.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes okay. We miss the aim.
Here's an idea, or something. Somebody came up with a bunch of different ideas for creative business cards. Okay. So, for example, a cheese shop, their business card looked like a cheese grater.
Okay.
A butcher, their business card looked like a meat cleaver.
Okay.
Filmmaker, an admission ticket. That's kind of okay. Painter, theirs looked kind of like a paint chip. You know, the paint chip when you go to the store to pick out the paints you want. And then, and I'm not going to say this right, sommelier, the wine guy, their business card looked like it was wine stained, like somebody had put a wine glass on it. And there was like an arc of red on it.
Ah.
What do you think about creative business cards?
Oh, I love creative business cards. I think anything besides a white rectangular piece of paper with just printing on it.
Yeah.
Helps.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen some where they've, you know, they just curled the edges, add a little bit of color, you know, so it's more oval instead of square. And,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And they put a little bit of color in there to splash it. That's just basic adjustments. But I think anything that helps kind of capture the eye.
Yeah.
Capture the mind, I think, is a good thing. So things like you just described, I think, are great ideas. Thumbs up to that one.
Okay, thumbs up. I saw one that was like a florist, and they folded the business card so it looked like a bouquet of flowers, and then you open it up and you got, you know, the address. I thought that was good. And the thing I think about, my dad, when he was working, he had visited New Orleans. My uncle was living down there for a while. And of course, in Mardi Gras, they throw out coins and such out in the crowd. And he thought, huh. And he went and he had business cards that were made out of aluminum coins. So it looked like it was large, like a 50-cent piece, but it was his business card. So he always handed out those coins. And that was always kind of, I thought, well, that was kind of creative mm-hmm. business.
Only problem is those, a lot of times people take the cards and they used to, not so much anymore. But people used to take them and save them in card notebooks and yeah. things like that. So
his could, would still stand out because it didn't fit in there.
Well, then it usually got tossed, which I his mean, that's, didn't. That would people be, that's what him. I would do with mine.
Yeah, is but I'm
I
just
would
saying people them. Remembered him because of that.
They would remember him. Yes.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't always be able to know where to find that little coin. Yeah. But today people don't use those tools.
Yeah. We have business cards. How many, you don't use those. Yeah. You don't, that's not
you
a thing
take
much
the card
anymore.
And you, load it's a, it
you look for electronic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so one thing that I love is when people like upcycle, recycle, do things like that. I saw a edible drinking cups. So you think about your red Solo drinking cup, you're having a beverage. So it was a cup like that. Supposedly it was made out of some type of gelatin type edible material. And I go back to, ooh, Willy Wonka. What do you think about an edible drinking cup?
Well, first thing I thought is it, in order for it to be useful across the realm of different things that you might put in it, it would have to be pretty bland. I mean, no flavor to it, which means what's the point?
Why is that? Couldn't you have like a cherry cup and then have like Coke and have cherry
yeah,
Coke?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But you don't
have to match.
You'd have to match the the cup to the drink. And so it would limit the scope of what it could be used for. Or people just didn't eat it. It would make it biodegradable, which is good.
Yeah, that would be better, right?
That's a good thing.
Recycling, yeah.
Now, if they could make it, and hopefully it wouldn't like melt.
Yeah, you know, yeah, it's made that way.
Touch, you
yeah,
have to it wouldn't be. You would have to bite into it in order to break it and
right,
eat it.
Right.
And maybe those new Uber Eats commercials when people are eating stuff actually would work. You know, people could eat their cups. So
I don't know anything about those commercials. See, so those of you out there, you'll get that one.
Everybody else in the world who watches TV would know that commercial.
What about this? I saw a ticket machine, like say if you're going to get a ticket for the train or the bus or something like that, that accepts plastic bottles. You put enough plastic bottles in for your train ticket, or so it's recycling the plastic bottles instead of paying money. So you're recycling to pay for your ticket. Yes, no?
I don't think it would financially pay for itself. I like the concept. I like the idea of collecting the waste and having a process to recycle it. But I don't think financially it would pay for itself. I think it would... it'd be one of those like, hey, this is a great idea. And then it would financially fail because there's no real way to pay for the bus ride. Not really with a plastic bottle.
So you're just saying no.
I'm kind of a sideways thumb on that one.
Okay.
Because in one sense, I kind of like the concept, but I just don't think it would be fiscally
doable. So if they could make it something that was fiscally doable.
I would like it then.
Okay. Okay. Okay, here's another one for you, and there's a couple different versions. One is a machine where you could go and select your own sodas to make your own six pack. So you wouldn't just go buy a six pack of Coke or Sprite or Fanta. You could select the number of the flavors that you wanted. Do you think that's a thumbs up or?
I like that idea. I'd be a thumbs up on that one. I would also be a thumbs up on the idea if you could go and, you know, like those machines in like the fast food restaurants where you can go
and choose your flavors.
You can choose your flavor. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
So you can choose your flavors by pushing the buttons and then you can mix, you know, you can put, you can get Coke
cherry and
then
cherry and vanilla
Coke, or cherry yeah, yeah. vanilla, that kind of thing. Yeah. What if you could get like 2 liter bottles and you could do a mix, custom mix soda?
Well, they do have, and so then, you make your own soda machines that you can do that kind of thing at home though. That's out there. That's home? A thing. Yes.
Okay. That's something I hadn't heard of.
Yeah. That's a but thing.
I would say a thumbs up on the idea of the mix and match packets.
I would think, why have we not done this before? I mean, you can buy mix and match in terms of like, you go to the, even to the grocery store and craft beers, local breweries and stuff. You can mix and match. I'm like, well, you do it with beer. Why can't we do that with sodas? Right.
Mm-hmm.
So here's another one, a pizza vending machine. So you put your money in, you make your choice of what you want, and 2.5 minutes later, you have a little pizza.
Hmm. Well, I'll give it a go. I think I'm kind of mediocre on that idea, but
it's a fast food kind of thing, right? Yeah, it's not going to be high quality cuisine, right?
Vending machine food, you know, you're always kind of like, eh. But, you know, it's I'd give it a try.
Okay.
Yeah, it's worth a shot.
Here's one I think that's new. A rotating seat. So picture this, a bench in the park. So no back, but just like a bench, the side has a crank on it. So you could walk up, like we just had a rain shower. You could go up and you could twirl that crank so that the seat rotates around. So you have a dry patch to sit on versus what was just rained on.
Brilliant.
Really?
Brilliant idea. I would say that's a wonderful idea. You know, maybe you've already got this one on here, but kind of a takeoff on unique seats, like in public spaces, is like a hammock, public hammocks. So instead of like swings, you would have like a hammock that you could go and sit in.
Huh.
It might be a row of hammocks under a, like a swing.
I think it would depend on where, the location and, you know, because you'd be in a hammock, you want to be able to relax and enjoy, you're not going to be maybe just next to a parking lot or something like that, right?
But I like the crank bench idea. I'd say a thumbs up on that. Yeah. That's not hard to do, and it's just a unique, interesting concept.
Yeah. So, easy way to clear off the snow if you live in a,
there you go.
A northern kind of climate.
All we need is a crank roof and a crank sidewalk and a crank driveway.
Yeah, to clear it all off for you. So the snow's
on your driveway, you just crank, you hit the little button, and your driveway cranks, and the dry driveway rotates up onto the surface.
And the other driveway pushes the snow off.
Pushes the snow off, and the ice goes underneath and melts and drains away.
This is what creative ideas do. You hear one thing, and it takes you someplace else, right?
That's right. That's why they call that brainstorming.
Nice, nice. What about this? A Segway vacuum cleaner.
So you just stand on it and
you ride the Segway and sweep the floor.
And then when you lose your balance and fall and smash your head against the table, what happens then? Or you got to go down the stairs.
Well, you don't take your regular vacuum, roll it on the stairs, you use a different attachment. So you're not going to do that.
I wouldn't
with the
know because I never use the vacuum.
Well, there's that too.
Segway vacuum, I'm kind of mixed feelings about that.
I feel like it would have to be a large space. Like, it's the ballroom of the Marriott Hotel or the, you know, I don't think it's, you can do it in a domestic, most people's homes.
I'm trying to think, you know, I think like it's the more ballroom, commercial. The ballroom of the Marriott Hotel would need a vacuum that would be more industrial size.
Right, which they have. That's what they have now, but I'm
trying to think, how would a Segway be able to have that level of industrial capability?
I'm just saying it would require bigger space.
That's true.
A bigger area. Now, maybe like a ballroom, but maybe the hallway of the hotel where it's not so big. So zip down one way and back the other and you're, you've done it, you know, and you do it every day. So that's the, just the general cleanup.
Well, that would be interesting. That'd be interesting. I could see a, like a stand behind, like you have,
don't they have,
there's mowers, like you mow your grass.
Yeah, and it's a stand behind mower. They got, I think they have vacuums that are that probably. Way too.
Yeah, probably. Interesting.
I'm not sure on that one though. Cause like you said, there's a certain amount of balance you've got to have on a Segway.
Yeah.
And you'd have to be the right kind of space cause it's not going to work in your home.
And hey, it's going to be hard to get corners and all that kind of stuff. I think it's an interesting concept that really probably in practicality is not functional.
Yeah. This one I really, really like.
Okay.
A floor plan light switch. So it's not just a little toggle. It's a flat panel that's a little bit larger that has just an outline of the floor plan. And depending on where you touch it, you that space, you turn the light on or off.
Okay.
So the hallway or the bathroom or the...
I think they kind of have those things. That's kind of a smart, it's right, like a smart right. panel. And you can, I think you can actually set your house up to where you got like a panel like that on your phone and you can turn the lights off and off around, off and on around your house.
Right. But most houses do not have a panel like that where you can select the lights and.
Right. Yeah. I like the idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That way, if you go into the bathroom, I can turn the light off on you while you're in there.
Our daughters used to do that. One daughter used to do it to the other all the time. As soon as she went into the restroom, she'd walk by and stick her hand in and turn the light off on her.
The other day I was at a client's and I was there with one of my coworkers and my coworker went to the restroom. And when he came back, I went to the restroom. When I walked in, the light was off in the restroom. And in this restroom, there's like two stalls with like big doors.
Yeah.
And I walked in, lights off. So I flipped the light on and somebody in the stall went, "Oh, thank God."
So the whoever left did not realize was somebody was in the stall.
It was my coworker.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, thank God.
Okay. I've only got about three left here.
All right.
This I like, but you might not, and you might not see the value in it. Non-permanent highlighters so that the ink fades after about 6 months. So the books look good as new and not marked in.
I think if it's a book that you're going to return or you're planning to return or sell after a period of time, like a school book, like a college textbook, great idea. But most of the time, for my purposes, if I'm highlighting something, I want it to stay highlighted so that a year from now, if I want to go back and find it, I can find it.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, I think for limited use, it's a good idea.
Well, and to be fair, school books anymore, even in lower grades, tend to be online or electronic. So back in the day when we used to do that to highlight, if you resold a book at college, you got less money out of it if it had any markings on it. Right. So being able to, for that to fade away, like you said, would be good. But yeah, how?
So it's mixed for me. It's a mix depending on what purpose I would be wanting to highlight for. Mm-hmm. I would hate to highlight something planning to come back and look at it again in a year and then I can't find it because I used the wrong highlighter.
Yeah.
That would be irritating. But for the right purpose, I think it's a good idea.
I'm trying to think, even if you were like, say you had a document in business that you used that for as part of sharing and collaborating on it. And then, but I can't think of a, a good use because we do, you know, you just do so much electronically where you add notes and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. What about this? An exercise bike that has a built-in washing machine so that as you cycle, it cycles clean your clothes. So it, picture this, an exercise bike and the front, you know, a lot of times that front is a large tire. So it'd be a large capacity area around the area in the front. So that's where the laundry goes in. And then you sit on the back, the seats back a little bit and you pedal and that cycles the wash through.
Well, that might be really useful for someone who is a professional cyclist and they're going to cycle all the time. I think for the average household, that would be just another giant thing that you throw stuff on because we would end up hanging things on it. And you know, you go in and out of the habit of using your exercise bike. But on the other hand, it would kind of force you to ride your bike all the time, right? Because that's the only way you're going to wash your clothes. So you got to, and you better not hurt yourself because if you hurt yourself, all of a sudden you can't do your laundry. So I don't know. I see some aspects of it, but I could see where it would be problematic in other places.
Especially if you're in a very small place, an apartment or what have you, and you wouldn't be doing big loads, like a full load, like when you, like here at our house when I strip the bed to clean all the bedding and such. It would not be for that. But a few shirts and shorts or socks, I could see it being, because there are like portable washing machines that you can hook up to your sink and do just little small loads and stuff.
Before, I think, I think it's one of those really interesting ideas that has no legs. I don't think it will work.
Get it? No legs. Yeah, bike,
pun was not intended.
Okay. Here's my last. Did you have one there you wanted to share?
I have a couple, but go ahead with your last one and I'll share a couple more.
Okay. A smart duvet, so comforter. And in this smart duvet, you can control the temperature to be cooler or warmer, and it can be done by each side. It's done because the way it was describing this possibility was there are like air chambers because, you know, a comforter is thick pocketed stuff. So there would be air chambers in there. And
I thought a duvet thing was one of those things you put in the, it's like a European toilet kind of thing where you spray bottom.
That's a bidet.
Oh, bidet. Okay. Like, okay.
A duvet tends to be a cover of like a comforter.
These words, these other foreign words.
Okay, it's a blanket that you can make hot or cold on either side.
So I'm from Indiana. You got to give me the blanket. You got to use words I understand.
Please don't use the duvet as a bidet.
Or vice versa.
Right.
So basically you got a hot side and a cold side of your blanket.
You can choose it to be that way. Like, okay, we share the same bed. Uh-huh. So it's my side, your side. Like our cars, a lot of
times.
And
after you twist a couple of times, it's all on your side.
So then I just adjust the temperature.
Right? Yeah. You know, I can see that could be useful. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, absolutely.
Especially because, like I said, cars today, I think for that very reason, one person's hot, one the other person's cold, and you can kind of climate control change on either side. I thought there's some potential to that.
Yeah, there's some potential in there. All right, you ready for mine?
All right, give me a couple.
Just give you a couple. One is an electrical outlet that actually has an extension cord built into a spool inside the wall.
Oh, I love that idea.
So you just loosen up the outlet and then pull it, and then it extends a cord off a spool.
Yes, please. Now, is there like a button to retract it?
Yeah, it retracts back and spools back into the wall. And it just looks like an outlet again.
Yes, please. I definitely thumbs up on that one. Yeah. I would like that.
So I think that's a great idea. Another one is city lights blackout curtains. So like if you guys sleep during the day, for example.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, you got window in your bedroom.
Right.
And it's all bright and light. So you want something to black it out.
Yeah.
You pull down these curtains. And it's got a whole bunch of little, the curtains are black and flat.
Right.
And it's got little tiny holes so that it looks like city lights.
Oh, so like the
So it's like, it gives you the impression.
The scene of,
it's like a cityscape created by the light of the outside. So
sounds,
I thought to
sounds pretty, but I say no.
Really? I kind of liked that.
I say no because if I want it blacked out, I want it blacked out. I don't want to see the city lights. I want it to be dark.
All right. Well, how about this one? This one the guys ought to like.
Okay.
It's coming up on football season. Uh-huh. How about a coffee table with a built-in fridge? So you got your coffee table right there in front of your sofa, and all you do is pull a little drawer out, and there's a refrigerated compartment where you can keep all your drinks. Refrigerated coffee table.
Huh.
As a guy, I like that idea.
Do you?
Yeah. A lot better than that vacuum cleaner ride-around thingy. What'd you call
matter.
It?
Segway ride around thingy. Right around thingy.
Right around thingy.
Bidet. I hope you guys are as entertained as we are.
Well, hey.
I'm not sure about that. I see potential to it, especially if you're in a man cave and it's all right there, or a basement family room or something like that. I see potential in it, but I also see potential. Like I got to, in every refrigerator, there's usually, you need to clean it out occasionally, or sometimes they have a little freezer section. So you've got to defrost and.
This is just a little refrigerated drawer.
Like kind of like a wine refrigerator kind of thing where it doesn't have the ice.
Right.
Partial.
Now you might, maybe you have a nice drawer over here on the other side. That's another idea, but anyway, how about just a light up bike path? So the bike path has little solar crystals in it. And during the day they charge and at night they light up. So it creates a lighted bike path at night.
Mm.
Not liking that
it
one?
It sounds pretty, but how practical is it? The number of people that go out and ride their bike now, because it lit up and because people walk on it as well. But, if you're riding a bike at night, you've got, and you're safe, you've got reflective gear on, you've got lights. And I do like it in the safety sense that you're riding on it. So you're not worried about running into a chuck hole or something because it's lit up and you can see it. But I don't know how practical it would be for the masses. Now, does it light up? Is it light up enough so that walkers enjoy it and can see where they're walking, but it's not so bright that it takes away from the ambiance?
Yeah, it's kind of a glow.
Yeah,
Kind of a glow. Huh. All right, this is my last one.
Okay.
It really kind of comes out of one where they've taken, it's on an airplane, and the ceiling panel, they simulate a night flight. They simulate the night sky along the ceiling
panel. I do like that because that feels natural. It doesn't feel when you're in an airplane, it's just all so plastic and so.
Right. And I had
sterile.
That's their idea. My idea kind of springs off that. It brought back to me an idea I was having while I was on an airplane not long ago is what if they raised the seats up, took the overhead compartment, right? Took the overhead compartment out.
Yeah.
And raised the seats up so that you could actually store your luggage under your seat. And then they took the ceiling panel and made it like one of those Tesla windshields. So like if you've been in a Tesla, if you've ever been in like a Tesla car or SUV, the windshield actually comes back all the way over the top of your head. Mm-hmm. So it's almost becomes the sunroof. And what if they took all that panel out where they store luggage over your head, where you feel like it's going to fall on you, and they put it under your seat and then took the ceiling and put some sort of a panel there where you can see out like a sunroof and you'd have the ability maybe to close it, like pull a shade around. So if you didn't want it shine on, you could, or maybe it's it would have to be tinted because you don't want the glare
burned by the sun.
But so there's a few things, quirks to work out, but basically you would be able to see out.
Kind of like, Wonder Woman had an airplane that was like glass or that was transparent or something that way. Didn't she back in the day?
Yeah. Well, I think one of them had an invisible airplane. Yeah, I'm not going for invisible airplanes here. I just want to be able to see out.
To see out.
And just think, you can see above you. You're already, roughly 33,000 feet up. And all of a sudden you can see over your head and you're getting pretty close to the upper limits of the atmosphere. I think that would be a really interesting perspective to be able to see.
I'm voting thumbs down on that. And to play around with it, but I think I don't want to see all that, nor do I want to see the little birds that hit it.
No bird's going to hit it at 30,000 feet.
I think the only challenge with elevating the seats, I think that's interesting to put the luggage under compartment underneath, is mobility. Some people would not, because you'd have to step up to your seat then, and that could be a challenge.
Well, you'd have to have sections for mobility, for people who have mobility limitations.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you'd have to have some adjustment for that.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think it's safer than, I see all these people get these suitcases that barely fit in.
Well, that's a whole nother discussion, right?
They're full and they're heavy and they're lugging them up.
They over don't have maybe the strength. Yeah, yeah.
And then they're pulling them back down over the top of people's heads.
Well, and to be fair, the concept initially was not for it to be what it has become today, right? We're all trying to do carry on and it's stuffed as much as we possibly can get squeezed in there. And
They created their own issues when they started charging you for carry on or for checked bags, but that's even a whole other issue
from that. Yeah. Even separate from that. It's just people pack differently.
So that's my ideas.
Interesting ideas there. And that's the thing that I love about this, is just to think about the possibilities. What could we do? Right. Mm-hmm.
And it just comes down to people being creative, coming up with new concepts, new ways of doing things. And that's why we have you think about everything you have in front of you right now is because somebody thought about it.
Yeah.
And that's what we got to keep doing. We got to keep being creative.
Absolutely.
So anyway, that's all I got. What do you got? Anything else?
No, that's all I've got for today.
Well, folks, thanks for listening in on this episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast and listening to Nancy and I banter a little bit back and forth of each other. And I hope you like the crazy ideas. But at the same time, I hope you check out my books.
Yes, please
now
do.
Now that my trilogy's done.
Let us know what you think.
Don't forget to go get the Cutter's Notch series and check it out. See what's happening in Cutter's Notch. And Bill Whitehair, thank you for all your work.
Thanks, Bill.
And we will catch you next time on the next episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast.
The Cutter's Notch podcast is available through most podcast listing providers. New episodes drop approximately twice a month. You can email Michael at authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com. Michael DeCamp is the author of two novels, Abandoned Hope, Cutter's Notch Book 1, and Nozomi's Battle, Cutter's Notch Book 2, a collection of short stories entitled Cutter's Notch Interludes, and one nonfiction Christian devotional book entitled Loving Out Loud, Learning to Love in a Hate-Filled World. All books can be found on Amazon or ordered from your local bookseller. Please join us again on the next episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast.